The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Family Sanity with your host, Dr. Brian Stress. When you or a loved one are facing life's challenges, this hour could be your lifeline to understanding and improving your relationships. No matter your age, there is something here for you. Now, here is Dr. Brian Stress.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Family Sanity, and I'm your host, Dr. Brian Stress, with special co-host Cynthia Kent. Thanks for joining us today. On our show today will be pharmacist Ted Regalia and Mark Mall, who is a counselor as well as an expert in nutrition, will also be joining us a bit later. Today's topic is actually one of my favorite topics because I've had the opportunity to deal with thousands and thousands of temper tantrums as a psychologist working with individuals of all ages. I find them to be very treatable if certain criteria and an understanding is developed by the individual who is witnessing or attempted to be manipulated by the temper tantrum. So most everyone has witnessed a temper tantrum or been involved in a temper tantrum at some point. Temper tantrums are not only orchestrated by children, but also occur with adolescents, adults, and the elderly. Research suggests that temper tantrums with males and females are equally common and are incredibly uncomfortable to deal with, especially in public environments. There are actual reasons that temper tantrums occur, as well as very effective tools that will reduce the frequency and how volatile or violent the current or future temper tantrum will be. So let's talk about, Cynthia, you've dealt with temper tantrums. Let's start off with children. We'll talk about how temper tantrums actually occur throughout certain people's lives from birth to death, but you've certainly dealt with temper tantrums as a mom as well as a counselor.
That's right.
Tell us more about that. What is a temper tantrum in your opinion?
Well, in my opinion, a temper tantrum is an attempt to either regain control over the situation. I mean, it depends, I suppose, on the age. You know, if you have an eight-month-old throwing a tantrum, which is, you know, I've seen it before, it's usually when they don't get what they want, and so they kick and scream to get that. It could be a toy, it could be different things.
So the temper tantrum is a response by the individual throwing the temper tantrum to manipulate somebody or something.
Absolutely, to really get what they want or gain control over their environment.
Okay, and I think we need to really take a second here and identify that. That's different than asking somebody to do something that they don't have the capacity to do.
Correct.
Okay, so can you talk a little bit more about that, please?
Well, right, if I ask a two-year-old to complete a task that only a four-year-old can do, I'm really setting them up for failure. This is not what that means. That a temper tantrum is more, being able to complete a task or trying to regain control over the situation or the person to get what they want.
Okay, so you use the word regain control, but it could be that the individual is just trying to get control.
Right, absolutely, right. It's, a child, when we're dealing with toddlers, they often feel out of control, feel like they, sometimes language comes into play as well. Maybe they don't have the capacity to express some things and they get frustrated. Nevertheless, I mean, I'm not justifying a tantrum because if we reinforce it, then it will continue to perpetuate and then we have lots of trouble. So.
Okay, and we'll get to that a little bit later here. But I just want to make it really clear for the listeners that a temper tantrum is not when somebody gets upset or frustrated because they can't do something they don't want it, that they don't have the capacity or the ability to
right.
do. So if you ask some, just real incredibly simplistic example here, if you ask somebody to jump 2 feet in the air and they only have the muscles to jump 4 inches, the fact it's really inappropriate of us to ask them to jump higher than they have the ability.
Right, right. And or if somebody, I ask a 1-year-old to put the dishes away, well, you know, that's
right.
Silly. I could maybe ask a 5-year-old to help dust the house, you know, but...
Right, but and then your expectations of a 5-year-old dusting the house, my guess would be that they're going to dust, but it's probably not going to be as good as maybe an adult dusting
the house. Of course, yeah.
Right.
You have to have clear, realistic expectations of what the task...
Sure, so acknowledging that person's ability based on their age and their how smart they are and things like that. I think Ted and I were talking a little bit before the show, and just real quickly, sometimes temper tantrums can happen in all ages. I've dealt with people who've had temper tantrums, children, babies, adolescents, adults, and even geriatric elderly people can have temper tantrums. But one of the what Ted and I were talking about previously was if somebody has dementia, that's not really a temper tantrum. That's their inability to understand or comprehend what's going on.
Right.
So that's we're back to capacity.
Because they don't have the ability to understand that they're actually manipulating this or attempting to manipulate their environment or the situation.
Right. So let's use the classic temper tantrum. Let's say, just for an example, a 7-year-old little boy or little girl is, let's say they're in the shopping cart at the local grocery store.
Right.
The 7-year-old mom and dad have, it doesn't matter, mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, whatever, they're there to get food and supplies for the family for the week.
Sure.
Okay, so the mother or father is, let's say, unloading the cart onto the conveyor belt to be checked out. The child grabs a candy bar.
Right, and don't they put them right strategically right at the checkout?
I don't know. Maybe that's another show. That's a good question. They put them there.
Yes. On purpose. So they grab the candy bar, and mom or dad or whoever says, "Nope, you can't have that."
Right. They say, "Please put that back." And normally, it's not a big deal at this point.
Right.
And then the child says no, that right. They're not going to put it back. We're starting in a temper tantrum here.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, the parents try to rationalize with the child. And based on that child or the individual who's holding the candy bar hostage, ability to understand, that rational approach may or may not have an effect. So the child just says no. And they increase their inappropriate behaviors. They get louder and louder and louder. And the really interesting part about that scenario, at least the part I find interesting, is the child is actually using the social environment against the parent.
Exactly. It's using the audience because they know that the parent's going to feel uncomfortable. Maybe they will give in.
Right. So the child, even a little baby, if they have the visual capacity, they can see the mother or father getting uncomfortable, turning red. And that's actually encouraging the tantrum to go because
right.
The child is now starting to get their way.
Right. So okay. One of the biggest strategies there is to remove the audience. And what are you going to do? Well, remove the child from the store.
Right. So it would be and I realize this is an inconvenience. What I recommend for parents and caregivers that this occurs to, which it happens frequently. If I go to any local large grocery store, if I stand by the checkouts, I'll see this in, you know, 1 or 2 times in a half an hour. But you pick the child up and you leave.
Right.
Okay. Here's the curveball of all this, of course. What if the child is bigger than the mother or father at this point? What if it's an adolescent? What do you recommend?
You're asking me what if it's an adolescent? Well,
what if the child is bigger than you?
You have to have some sort of leverage. I mean, the child is under your roof and under, you know, the phone, for instance, you know.
Okay, so you could say if you continue this, you're going to get a consequence.
Yeah, and I really hope an adolescent doesn't throw a tantrum over a candy bar at a store. But
oh no, I I asked the grandmother if I could talk about this, and she gave me permission. But she actually had she took in one of her grandchildren to help raise them due to a variety of circumstances in their lives. But the child was literally a foot taller than grandma.
Oh, God.
And the child is now, I think the child is about 13, 14 years old. And the child said, I want this gum. And the grandmother said, no. and the child, and then the grandmother and I had talked about how to deal with this before, so the grandma kind of knew exactly what she was going to do, and she kept her emotions under control. I can't emphasize that enough. The grandmother kept her emotions under control.
Right.
So anyway, the adolescent said, "What are you going to do if I take this?" And the grandmother said, "I'm not going to do anything. I'm going to call the police."
Mm-hmm.
And her granddaughter said, "Sure you will," and took the chewing gum and walked outside the front door of the store. What do you think grandma did?
Called the police.
Absolutely.
Good for her.
That's exactly what she did. And to this day, the child then felt incredibly embarrassed, the adolescent. And the last time I talked to the grandmother was about 2.5 years after the incident. The adolescent never participated in that behavior again.
That extinguished the behavior right away, didn't it?
Yep, it stopped it because the adolescent went, "Holy cow, I can't physically intimidate grandma. It's not going to work. And grandma's going to call help of people who are bigger and stronger than me, so that's not going to work."
Yeah.
You know, but I think it takes a lot of courage for grandma to say, "I'm going to call the police." Okay, now here's the catch, though, and unfortunately I think this happens frequently. What if the grandma said, "I'm going to call the police," and did not call the police?
She's reinforcing the behavior, then the kid is going to do that again because it's not valid. She invalidated her own threat, if you will.
Right, so when you say reinforce, you're saying you've actually encouraged the child.
Absolutely. It's going to happen again.
It's going to happen again, and it's going to happen more frequently, and the chances of the child getting more violent or volatile is that you've actually increased it.
Right.
Because the child or adolescent is now participating in a behavior that works, and they're not going to stop. If you think about it, you know, a tantrum is really bullying.
Right.
It's the person who's throwing the tantrum is being a bully. They're trying to inappropriately control somebody else through inappropriate behaviors. Yeah, so, and I know there's a lot of, there's a national organization right now and national effort to stop bullying, and that's what we need to do. I think this is really important.
Well, it starts with childhood. I mean, I'm guessing that adolescent got away with lots of tantrums to get to the point of trying to manipulate grandma into buying her piece of gum or a packet of gum.
That's a good point. We'll get to that after our first break here. So we're coming up to our first break. If you or a loved one have any emotional, family, medication, or relationship questions related to tantrums, depression, anxiety, child raising, adolescent raising, spouse difficulties, please feel free to call our Behavior Health Response System to talk with myself, Cynthia Kent, Mark Mall. If you have medication questions, Ted Regalia is available at 1-877-238-2429. That's 1-877-238-2429. You can also go to our website at www.drstressassociates.com. That's www.drstressassociates.com. We'll be right back.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
If you have any emotional, cognitive, family, or other relationship questions or concerns, please call Dr. Stress's Behavioral Health Response System to talk with Dr. Stress or one of the trained professional coaches at 1-877-238-2429 for a minimal fee. You are not alone. We are here to help. Additional information about the Behavioral Health Response System may be found at drstressassociates.com. Also, Dr. Stress's book, The Parenting Cookbook, Thoughts, Ingredients, and Suggestions to Be an Awesome Parent, A Guide to Raising a Successful Child, is available at amazon.com. Can Chinese medicine and Western medicine go hand in hand when you are seeking treatment or a path to better health?
Absolutely. Listen each week for Sticking to the Point, Natural Medicine Radio with host Cheryl Hongzermeyer.
We'll explain Chinese medicine, including acupuncture, in easy-to-learn ways. We'll even spotlight certain conditions that don't have any diagnosis in the field of Western medicine.
Be sure to tune in every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
If you have a loved one that is undergoing treatment for substance abuse or mental illness, you owe it to them and yourself to tune in to One Hour at a Time with host Mary Woods. This compassionate and educational talk show will help you help those that you love by better understanding their condition and their personal recovery process. Tune in every Monday at 12 noon Pacific Time to One Hour at a Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Recovery begins this hour.
Step into a healthier you. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are tuned in to Family Sanity. To reach the show today, please call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send us an email to familysanity@drstressassociates.com. That's FamilySanity@drstressassociates.com. Now, back to Family Sanity.
Welcome back to Family Sanity, and I'm your host, Dr. Brian Stress. And we have with us a special co-host, Cynthia Kent, as well as Ted Regalia, who's a pharmacist. And today our topic is temper tantrums, birth through death. People of all ages can most certainly throw temper tantrums. But I think one of the things that we should, there's a couple points here that I guess I'd like to stress. Number one is my belief for the function of parenting. What's the purpose of a parent is to assist babies, children, adolescents, and even adults in learning the skills to be as successful as they can be. So a child, an adolescent, that's the time to teach the child or adolescent skills so that when they're 25, 35, 45, 65, that they can pursue their goals in life. And if one of the skills that individuals need to know and or learn is how to regulate their emotions. And individuals who are not able to regulate their emotions end up throwing temper tantrums. So, for instance, let's say a child or adolescent has been successful at throwing temper tantrums throughout childhood and adolescence. Now they're 22 years of age and they have their first job and their boss asks them to do something they don't want to do. The young adult now could throw a temper tantrum, resulting in them losing their job. So, if we don't deal with these temper tantrums, then it can end up really impairing that child or adolescent in adulthood. And unfortunately, I've witnessed a lot of individuals who utilize temper tantrums, and where I've interacted with these people is when they're in trouble with the law. When they've broken society's rules, they think speed limits don't really apply to them, or other society rules such as injuring or hurting other people, because they're used to getting their way. Now, Cynthia and Ted, we were talking briefly here during the break about how difficult it is to be the recipient of the temper tantrum, being the parent. And Ted, you were talking; you had an example of that.
Oh. Yeah, I'll put my daughter on the spot. When she was two, we were at Disney World, and she threw a massive temper tantrum and sprawled out right on Main Street, USA, screaming. And everyone's looking, and I'm looking like, yeah, who's that kid? Someone's doing a bad job of parenting here. At any rate, it was quite stressful, and ended up at the ESPN Zone with a very large beer. But nonetheless, having experienced it, it would have been really easy to say, boy, I want to throw a pill at this person and medicate them.
But right, like and you your said, two-year-old that, really like increased you said, Dr. Stress, your negative...
It's coaching.
Really increased your negative experience based on all the people that witnessed it and you being associated with it.
Yeah, it can be stressful, but like you said, it's the opportunity for parenting. I don't know that it necessitated any kind of medication at that point.
Right, right. Now, I've witnessed, I've experienced, I've been in the room when many medications have been prescribed to children and adolescents and even adults because they were throwing temper tantrums. Is there what I would say is a temper tantrum? It's emotional dysregulation. The individual gets really, really angry when they don't get their way. And then they participate in behaviors that can result in dramatic problems in their lives and other people's lives. So are there any medications that are approved? Let's start off with children, babies, to deal with temper tantrums that you're aware of.
Not directly temper tantrums. At some point, there can be a pediatric schizophrenia or a bipolar disorder. Also, you need to look at learning disabilities, Asperger's.
Okay, so what we're talking about there is what Cynthia and I were talking about in the first segment, which is that's a capacity question then. So if the person is not, let's say if somebody has a learning disability, they may get more frustrated because they can't read, write, or do math like their peers. That could result in them acting out behaviorally. But that's a result of us expecting them to do better, or actually the person expecting themselves to keep up with their peers, and they just don't have the ability. They don't have the capacity again.
Well, if we get to the point of needing medication, it's generally, and let's rule out some of the developmental disabilities. I guess we don't need to rule it out, but where I'm going with this is that the medications can be pretty risky, and that benefit would have to be greater than the risk, and the patient would be at risk for diabetes, weight gain.
All the side effects of what medications may have, correct?
They're serious, yeah.
Depending on the type of medication.
And most of the medications are going to be either in the antipsychotic class, like Risperdal or Haldol, or it could be a mood stabilizer, like Depakote or Valproic acid. Usually that's what you'll see in a younger pediatric child. And
okay.
But these meds have some serious side effects, and let's face it, only recently have there been significant studies with pediatric use.
Okay, so there's not a lot of research out there on using these drugs with children or adolescents.
Right.
Okay. Now, one of the questions I've always had, and I don't know if you can answer it or not, is, like, I've seen kids placed on Xanax or Ativan, which are depressants. They kind of squash the brain's ability to process information, which can result in them not having really, really anger outbursts and things of that nature. But does that medication, so as developmentally speaking, from a neurological point of view, from a brain development point of view, the brain is constantly making pathways. The way I think about it, it's making roads. It's like the internet. It's like the interstate system. It's like I-5 or or 405 or whatever major highway. And I wonder if somebody's on like a medication that depresses their neurological functioning, if that interferes with that child's ability to learn.
Even worse, it benzodiazepines like Valium and Xanax, they actually inhibit or prevent the formation of new memories.
Right, and that's what learning is.
Right.
Yeah, so I think that's another question that maybe individuals who are looking for medications to help deal with temper tantrums need to be aware of, is that there are medications that can maybe sedate the child, adolescent, or adult, but then that individual isn't going to learn the skills to manage their own emotions, which can result in even more problems, unfortunately.
All of that said, there are proper times where an individual child will probably need a very risky medication due to safety of that child or others,
right,
and to allow the child to at least develop without constant irritability and agitation and disruption.
Okay. Are you talking more like maybe a child who's been diagnosed with, let's say, a bipolar disorder or something? Like, basically, their brain it's redlining as a result of a chemical imbalance, things of that nature.
In those cases, certainly, I would go with the riskier medications when you have established that diagnosis.
Okay. Gone through the differential. Cindy, you were going to say something?
So it's the safety issue. No, I was just going to say just we have to assess the safety of the child and the environment and assess that way and perhaps medicate if necessary. I can't help but think about, like, for instance, autism, you know, where the child might not have that that capacity like we talked about earlier. Are there, Ted, any medications that are approved for, I don't know, I'm not necessarily thinking, you know, children like 1 or 2 years old, but a little bit older when autism is usually diagnosed. Are there medications that are appropriate for them?
Well, yes. It's usually going to be more of the agitation associated with the autism that you'll see risperidone or you'll see Depakote, which is a mood stabilizer, anticonvulsant. You'll see those used. Ages 6 and above, I believe they're approved for use.
Okay.
So, but that, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Ted, but what you're suggesting is medications may be deemed necessary if it's just so, the behavior is so volatile, so dangerous, and that's what Cynthia was talking about, the safety issue. But it's always been my course of treatment, I guess, is to assist that person in trying to learn that all behavior has consequences, and then to slowly maybe taper them off that medication, if at all possible, as that child or adolescent or even adult learns to manage their emotions. Would that be appropriate?
Sure. Short of any kind of chemical restraint, it may allow that person to be able to move to the next level and learn or improve the situation. But again, it's something, there are a lot of risks with these medications, and I just want to emphasize that.
So we need to properly assess the behavior to see if there's a chemical imbalance, and then we need to identify exactly what's going on. Is this a tantrum? Is this lack of an understanding of the person's capacity? Are we asking that person to do stuff they don't have the ability or capacity to do? And then we need to develop a plan as to, are medications part of this plan, and or how are we certainly going to help the individual learn to manage their behaviors.
Yep.
Would that seem kind of a good summation?
Yep.
Okay. Very good. Very good. And I think the other part too is that we need to emphasize here is I've had thousands of cases like this. It's much easier to deal with a temper tantrum, believe it or not, when the child is 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. The younger, the better. Because when you try to deal with a temper tantrum when the person is 18, 21, they're physically much stronger, their behaviors are more sophisticated, and unfortunately, the behaviors can be quite volatile, where maybe somebody could be hurt or worse, and we certainly don't want that. It's time for our second break here. If you or a loved one have any emotional, family, familial, medication, or relationship questions or concerns, please feel free to call the Behavior Health Response System to talk with myself, Cynthia Kent, Mark Mall, Ted Regalia, or one of our other trained professional coaches at 1-877-238-2429. That's 1-877-238-2429. And we'll be back with Mark Mall.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
If you have any emotional, cognitive, family, or other relationship questions or concerns, please call Dr. Stress's Behavioral Health Response System to talk with Dr. Stress or one of the trained professional coaches at 1-877-238-2429 for a minimal fee. You are not alone. We are here to help. Additional information about the Behavioral Health Response System may be found at drstressassociates.com. Also, Dr. Stress's book, The Parenting Cookbook, Thoughts, Ingredients, and Suggestions to Be an Awesome Parent, A Guide to Raising a Successful Child, is available at amazon.com.
If you are a parent who is dealing with a child who has issues related to a congenital heart defect, be sure to tune in every week to Heart to Heart with Anna. Anna Jaworski, who serves as your host, has a child who was born with a complex congenital heart defect, and she and her guests will help you discover resources and receive encouragement as you learn how to become an informed advocate in the congenital heart defect community. Heart to Heart with Anna is heard live every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific, on Voice America Health and Wellness. Frankly Speaking About Cancer is a program designed to empower survivors and their caregivers to deal with the social and emotional challenges of cancer. The show will invite physicians, researchers, nurses, social workers, patients, and caregivers to share their advice on how to live a better life with cancer. Join host Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community, Tuesday afternoons at 1 p.m. Pacific Time and 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Network.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are tuned in to Family Sanity. To reach the show today, please call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send us an email to familysanity@drstressassociates.com. That's familysanity@drstressassociates.com. Now, back to Family Sanity.
Welcome back to Family Sanity, and I'm your host, Dr. Brian Stress. We also have with us special co-host Cynthia Kent, Ted Regalia, a pharmacist, as well as Mark Maul, who's a counselor as well as a nutritional expert. So welcome, Mark. Are you on? Are you there?
I am still here.
All right. We're talking about temper tantrums today, and I know for a fact that you've dealt with many temper tantrums based on your where you've worked. I've actually witnessed you dealing with temper tantrums. And one of the things I have to say when I watch you deal with adolescents and adults using temper tantrums, you seem to have your emotions under control.
Yeah, I think that that's, as far as a behavioral standpoint goes, when you're a practitioner, you have to keep things in check. And the less response that you can give for the positive or negative, the better. I think that my stoicism probably has helped me in many situations.
Because one of the functions of the person throwing the temper tantrum is to make you upset, and
sure,
your stoicism, as you term it, your ability to not react positively or negatively results in the person maybe slowing their temper tantrum down a little bit.
Yeah, they essentially have nothing to feed off of. You know, even the nonverbals can
right.
make a difference. A smile could be interpreted as being condescending, or frowning, or showing even just a lift of your eyebrows could make them interpret that as being threatening, or
so you're
something
just,
to
yeah, push. Appropriate amount of attention, but not too much.
Exactly.
Right, and let's say if somebody's throwing a temper tantrum, and I'll be frank with you, I have to stop myself from smiling because, once again, I've dealt with thousands and thousands of these things at this point, and I'm thinking to myself as soon as I start to see a temper tantrum, this is a wonderful learning opportunity. I literally think that, and this is going to work. This is an opportunity to help this person learn how to manage their emotions and get their needs met in an appropriate way, not by bullying me or manipulating me. So, now, as far as nutritional aspects related to temper tantrums, that's kind of a tough question, I think. What do you got for us today?
I think one of the first things that we have to consider is that it's not all about trout in this situation. And it hurts a little bit for me to say that. I got to be honest with you.
Okay.
But that's not the answer.
What other fish, though, Mark? I'm sure you got another fish out there for tantrums.
Yeah, I do have some ideas for dealing with tantrums. The first thing, before you even consider the types of foods, is to maintain consistency. So having a breakfast and a snack and a lunch and a snack and a dinner is going to help a lot. Something as simple as missing an apple for a snack could potentially prompt a temper tantrum.
Let me repeat what you're saying back a little bit differently, and I think I'm the model of this, unfortunately. But if I don't eat properly one of my symptoms is I get irritable.
Yes, you do. You're not one of the fun kids to hang out with when you don't eat.
And what you're saying is, so making sure that the person is not becoming irritable as a result of lack of nutrition is appropriate, but eating, when you're talking about three meals and a couple snacks, you're talking about small portions here, not giving somebody a cheeseburger every other hour.
Yeah, it's just something small. And the snacks, a lot of times, what I've noticed is the snacks themselves can actually get rid of a lot of the problems that you could see. And like I said, it could be something as simple as a piece of fruit.
Sure.
And if it's just whether it's distraction or whether it's the consistency and, you know, being habitual, maybe a combination of all of them, that's really the first step, I think.
Sure. So if somebody's on their way to throwing a tantrum and they get a piece of fruit, that's kind of nurturing. That's demonstrating maybe you care about somebody.
It's hard to... Exactly. And you can even point that out. You can say, hey, it's time for a snack, and attention is going to be diverted.
Excellent. Yes. What else you got?
One of the other things that we need to consider, there's a long name for an acid, but it comes from a plant hormone. It's called salicylic acid, and two specific products that you have to be careful with that have been linked to tantrums are Pepto-Bismol and Noxzema.
Really?
So, you know, and the Pepto-Bismol is especially interesting to me because what's one of the first things that parents give their kids when they have an upset stomach? Give them Pepto-Bismol.
Sure.
So you do have to be careful with those two products. And as far as the brand names go, I'm not saying that if you give those to people that it's going to cause issues, but they have been linked to tantrums.
So there's researchers that suggest that if a child, is this for children, adolescents, and adults, take these medications?
Yes.
Then there seems to be some irritability and potential tantrums afterwards?
That is correct.
Interesting. Huh. Who would ever thought of that question?
You know, and if I may just add something there, and for stomach aches, for my kids, I give them probiotics. I don't know if you have any, you know, because if they're irritable because their stomach hurts or whatever, of course, I mean, it's the Pepto-Bismol and maybe the fact that they don't feel well, that discomfort that...
Sure.
Yeah, so I was thinking I wouldn't give Pepto-Bismol. I'd probably start with probiotics first and see how that works. Yogurt or whatever has...
Yeah. So you're saying that we're once again back to that capacity. If somebody's feeling physically ill, their stomach hurts, then there's a higher chance they're going to be irritable. That's
true.
Not really... That can lead to a temper tantrum, but helping them feel better physically can reduce the possibility of a temper tantrum. Correct? Is that what you're saying, Mark and Cynthia?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So then what? So you're saying, Mark, you're saying, suggesting make sure that the person isn't hungry, reduce the possibility, and basically we'd say variables related to somebody becoming irritable, which could result in a temper tantrum.
Exactly. And I think that you hit it right on when you talked about dealing with younger kids, because it's much easier to manipulate the situation so that they feel better, so that they don't go into a tantrum.
Right, right. And I think I don't know if you guys have seen this, but there's a famous on YouTube of a woman throwing a temper tantrum with her husband. She wanted to go to the lake.
I've seen that.
You've seen that?
No, I haven't. I got to see it now.
Oh, okay, but basically the long story short is the man had to, the husband had to run some errands that day. He had to, like, I don't know, get an oil change and change the tires on his car or something like that. And his spouse was in the passenger seat, and she literally threw a temper tantrum because she wanted to go to the lake and go to ride in the boat. And the thing, and my understanding is, unfortunately, that couple, the last I read, which is certainly not accurate or current, is that their relationship was having a significant amount of problems. But when I watched that video, because it was a tremendous temper tantrum, she started kicking the dash, throwing her arms, and I mean, just like a little child would. And she's probably in her 20s or 30s, would be my guess. But what crossed my mind is, how many temper tantrums had she gotten away with before that? How many times had the temper tantrum worked to manipulate other people, including her husband. So, I mean, and there was all sorts of comments about the woman's behavior, but I think we, you know, there's some accountability for people who've been giving into that behavior, because she certainly wouldn't have been using that inappropriate behavior to the extent she did if it hadn't been effective at some point.
Right.
Right. So, Mark, anything else you have about with us, or any other information related to nutrition? Or
I do, actually. And one I think gets overlooked a lot, but it seems commonsensical to me, is that dairy, lactose intolerance. If you have kids in school who have some degree of lactose intolerance and they're given milk at maybe lunch and maybe a snack, or if there's cheese products or whatever, there's a chance that they could be eliciting a tantrum, especially in the younger grades. That's what I've noticed. And I don't think that really gets considered. A lot of times people may not even know it.
We could even take that construct even. So basically being allergic, an allergic reaction could result in irritability. Would you agree with that, Ted?
Oh, definitely. But I was thinking about gluten. What about gluten, Mark?
I think gluten is a fad topic, and when I looked into some of the research, there were indications that there could be a correlation with intake of gluten and temper tantrums. But it's kind of like with the lactose intolerance. A lot of times people don't even know it, and they'll throw the temper tantrum. And I think that's why, as a practitioner, we really have to be alert. Even whether it's the person serving the food at lunch or teachers or whoever, being able to understand what that kid is normally like versus what they're acting like now.
Sure. So once again, we're back to which I am absolutely a disciple of, is proper assessment, trying to figure out the pattern of the behavior. Is there a certain time during the day that the tantrum occurs? And what's going on at that time? Is the person, you know, I think another thing we have to talk about real quickly is sleep. People who don't sleep. I don't know about you guys, but if I don't sleep, I get irritable.
Yep, same here.
Higher probability, you know, that I could participate in inappropriate behaviors, the things I wouldn't do if I was rested.
And I think you're much quicker to go from zero to tantrum when you don't get enough sleep.
Sure. Yeah.
Absolutely. And that can happen at any age. I mean, children, you know, and as, earlier we were talking about, you know, food intake and fatigue and discomfort. Like, I'm thinking of a baby, you know, a baby whose diapers haven't been changed. You know, well, maybe that's the reason why. So, yeah, I agree with you, Brian. The proper assessment is crucial.
Right, and we're most certainly helping that person, like with a baby. We're not saying, you know, if a baby's crying, we're not saying ignore it. What we're saying is you have to assess what's going on and make sure that their diaper is clean, that they don't have a rash, that they're you know, maybe they're teething. All these other things need to be ruled out. And if we then come to the conclusion that this is a manipulation, then it's better to deal with it from a behavioral point of view. So we're up to our third break here. So if you or a loved one have any emotional difficulties, if you have tantrums in your life and you need some help to deal with those with other people of all ages, please feel free to call our Behavior Health Response System to talk with myself, Cynthia Kent, Mark Mall, pharmacist Ted Regalia, if you have any medication questions, at 1-877-238-2429. That's 1-877-238-2429. 2429, and we'll be right back with Family Sandy.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
If you have any emotional, cognitive, family, or other relationship questions or concerns, please call Dr. Stress's Behavioral Health Response System to talk with Dr. Stress or one of the trained professional coaches at 1-877-238-2429 for a minimal fee. You are not alone. We are here to help. Additional information about the Behavioral Health Response System may be found at drstressassociates.com. Also, Dr. Stress's book, The Parenting Cookbook, Thoughts, Ingredients, and Suggestions to Be an Awesome Parent, A Guide to Raising a Successful Child, is available at Amazon.com. Make the most of your beautiful life. Listen to Ageless Living with Dr. Tong Li and co-host Kurt Wilhelm to gain tips on how to live healthier and happier, alleviate suffering, prevent disease, become more beautiful in body, mind, and fashion, and find peace, balance, and success in your life. Are you aware that every 3,500 calories that you eat above what you burn will put a pound of fat on your body? And running 1 mile only burns 200 calories? So portion size does matter, and migraines do have a cure. What is it? You'll have to tune in Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are tuned in to Family Sanity. To reach the show today, please call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send us an email to familysanity@drstressassociates.com. That's familysanity@drstressassociates.com. Now, back to Family Sanity.
Hello, welcome back to Family Sanity. I'm your host, Dr. Brian Stress, and we have with us today special co-host Cynthia Kent, Mark Moll, who's a counselor as well as expert nutritional person, as well as Ted Regalia, a pharmacist. If you have any questions about tantrums, need some help figuring out maybe how to deal with a tantrum or whether or not it's actually a tantrum, please feel free to call the Behavioral Health Response System at 1-877-238-2429. That's 1-877-238-2429. And Mark, you had some other information about nutrition and tantrums. What else do you have for us, sir?
The only thing that I wanted to touch on briefly was preservatives. There's been a link with MSG, monosodium glutamate, and with tantrums, such as processed foods, deli meats, powdered cheese. Like the cheese singles that you put on the sandwiches a lot of times, especially for kids. And then food coloring. You'll see like yellow number 5, or my favorite, when I went to Sam's Club, this is no rip on Sam's Club, but one of the salmon packages said that this product was given a red color so that it would resemble a wild salmon.
See, so food coloring can be a problem, which could result in some. It's really basically an allergic reaction. Wouldn't that be how we quantify that? I guess.
Yeah, I mean it would relate back to that. But these are some of the preservatives and things to consider, especially when you're working with kids.
Very good. Now, we've talked about tantrums, and certainly there are a lot of behaviors that are not tantrums that may mimic tantrums. But if we were to deal with tantrums, Cynthia, what other suggestions do you have for our listeners?
Well, like you said, I mean, assessing the cost of it and making sure that the person is not fatigued or hungry or discomfort. There's a couple of preventive things that I was thinking of, one of which is your child getting enough attention? Are you spending positive time with your child on a regular basis? Because sometimes they will try to get attention. Negative attention is attention. So that's a preventive measure. I'm not saying do this while the tantrum is going on, but you can also share control. So giving choices for children, such as do you want milk or water for your supper drink, or do you want carrots or broccoli, some things that don't necessarily matter to you that much, but to them it's like,
they have a say. They have
control.
They
have, right. I get the choice here.
Yeah.
The other one for younger children, I'm thinking of like the 8-month-old or the 1-year-old. Sometimes distractions. I think this was mentioned earlier. I think Mark mentioned this. Distracting the kid, maybe with a, like you said, a piece of food, or I'm just thinking like at church. You know, when my kids were younger, and like I would just try to distract them with other things because it was 1 hour is a long way to go. So distractions worked awesome. The other one, while we talked about this before, removing the audience. So like we started talking about the child who starts throwing a tantrum at the grocery store.
you leave. Removing the child from there is removing the audience from them. So
it's really taken the focus, one of the manipulative tools away from the child.
Exactly.
Right. And I realize, I want to make sure I understand that parents are busy. I absolutely respect that. Moms and dads are busy, grandmas and grandpas. But if a child is throwing a tantrum and you can still physically control them, picking them up and leaving the grocery store, they're going to go, holy cow. Now, I realize that's going to be an incredible inconvenience because you're going to have to go back and get the groceries again. Maybe you can tell them to, put it in bags and you'll be back later, but it's going to cost you more time. In the long run, though, you're going to save hours and hours and hours and problems related to nipping that tantrum in the bud when you're younger as opposed to later.
Right. So sending the child to the room until they're calm. They can come out of the room when they're calm. And you said earlier, I just want to emphasize how important it is to stay calm. I mean, it's frustrating to deal with a tantrum because you know you're being manipulated, but if you give in to the power struggle, oh my gosh, it's going to be worse.
One of the primary goals here of dealing with the temper tantrum, and I think you did a wonderful job highlighting this, we don't want to make it worse. We don't want to make the tantrum. We don't want to reinforce. We don't want to encourage the tantrum to be more violent. We don't want to give the individual throwing the tantrum feedback so there's more tantrums as opposed to less tantrums.
Right.
I guess the one caveat I would say with sending somebody to the room, it's not appropriate if somebody's throwing a tantrum and you send them to a room so they go play a video game, text message their friends and are on the phone, because they may go, I love being sent to my room.
Right. It reinforces the behavior if it's
okay, so once again, you're positively, you're giving them a positive feedback. Reinforcement can be positive or negative, but if you send them to their room and they get to do fun things, they're like, tantrums work great. Look at all the fun I'm having.
Right.
Yep. Anything else you'd like to add?
No, I think that's it. I think we covered it all.
And I don't know if we covered it all, but it's certainly a start. But I just like to reiterate that, once again, I've dealt with thousands. I can't even imagine how many working in treatment centers with children, adolescents, adults, even geriatrics. But a temper tantrum is a manipulation. So I looked up, of course, did some research on temper tantrums prior to the show, and what I found on the Internet is some information that is like, you know, don't worry about the temper tantrum. It's your child's way or adult's way of being spirited. Well, a temper tantrum, if it's successful, leads to more problems. And as individuals who care about that person, a parent, a grandmother, a grandfather, whoever, it's really our responsibility to assist that person in developing the skills so they can learn how to manage their emotions, which of course leads to success throughout their lives. I don't know of any human that is always correct. I don't know of any human that wins every game they are in or every interaction. So another analogy I provide to parents is if children, adolescents, and or adults don't learn that there are rules outside of themselves and there are consequences for all behavior, good and bad, and I think that's what Cynthia was touching on here. If children are going to get attention, adolescents, adults, we all like attention. But are they going to get the attention through positive means, or are they going to do it through negative? If you are only responding to an individual when they're being inappropriate or naughty, then they're just going to be inappropriate and naughty more frequently.
Right.
If you're responding to that person and sometimes it's really hard, but you have to find that, you know, boy, you tied your shoes well today, you know, for a 2-year-old or 3-year-old, that's a wonderful compliment that may help them maintain a good mood for a bit. So the ratio that I like to promote when working with parents and or working with other individuals is 6 positives for every negative. So, and a positive doesn't have to be giving somebody a new car or a new video game every other day. It can just be a wink, a touch on the shoulder, offering somebody a glass of water, helping them carry out the garbage, helping them shovel, helping them mow the lawn, whatever, carrying in the grocery stores. All those things can be positive. So, and I think, real quickly, Ted, medications can be beneficial related to the volatility and or if there's other things going on besides it's pure manipulation. But at the same time, medications can actually squash a person's ability to learn, and we certainly don't want to do that. Definitely. Would you agree with that? Now, and the other thing is, and I can't reiterate this enough, I've actually dealt with people, unfortunately, adolescents, and the tantrums can go way beyond anybody's expectation or guess. I've seen people throw tantrums where they've gone home, taken a gun, and shot out the walls in the house. I mean, that's, of course, an incredibly severe temper tantrum. That's what it was, a temper tantrum. The person didn't like what the consequences they were receiving from an organization, so they went home because their parents wouldn't protect them from the consequences. It's easier to deal with the temper tantrum when they're younger. So that's all the time we have today. The information presented by the participants in Family Sanity is not intended for the diagnosis or treatment of any medical, psychological, pharmaceutical, or nutritional difficulty. If you or a loved one have any questions or concerns about temper tantrums, depression, anxiety, if you have medication questions, please feel free to call the Behavioral Health Response System to talk with one of our professional coaches, such as myself, Cynthia Kent, Mark Mall, Ted Regalia, our pharmacist, at 1-877-238-2429. That's 1-877-238-2429. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for being a part of our show. Upcoming show topics may be viewed at drstressassociates.com or at the Family Sanity Facebook page. Dr. Stress would also like to thank all the participants who contributed to the show with your phone calls and email comments. Please join Dr. Stress again next week for another edition of Family Sanity on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel, Tuesday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time, 10 a.m. Eastern Time. Have a great week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.